Okay, so we'll resume. I want to ask you about Hudson's a little bit.
Okay.
Such an iconic
Yeah.
Detroit. I didn't grow up here, but I quickly learned what Hudson's meant to the city. So talk, you
Well, it
mentioned you were
was,
a darkroom technician.
yes.
So tell me
Yeah,
about
I
that.
mean, you know, Hudson's, yes, it was a big, the big department store in downtown Detroit. And of course, I used to go there with my ma when I was a little boy. She'd shop there, as so many people did.
How did you get the job?
Well, right after I graduated from, I still had like one class to make up to get my degree at CCS. So I think but in 78, I was pretty much finished at CCS, and I found out, somebody told me that there was a darkroom position opening at Hudson's. And the main guy's name was Dick Sizedek. DEK, SYZDEK. So I interviewed and got the job. And it was on the 19th floor. And my college sweetheart, whose name was Bonnie Detloff, who I met at CCS, she was in graphic design. And she also got a job on the 19th floor, in another section of that floor where all the illustrators and designers were. You know, we did the photography and then they laid it all out and put it in the paper. So we would, I remember how it worked. She lived in the suburbs with her parents, but maybe she'd pick me up and we used to drive down and park in one of the parking lots down there. And I remember walking up sort of to the back of Hudson's, and we'd go in the employee entrance, or the door, maybe the doors were open, and get on the elevator. There was somebody in the elevator at the time, the elevator operator. Pull the big gates, metal gates closed, go up to the 19th floor, and she'd go to her place and I to mine. And there were a number of photographers. There was a pretty good crew there. And I was just up there. I had a little dark room and I developed all the black and white film and I made prints, made enlargements, and they were then transferred into the ads that used to appear in the news and the Free Press for Hudson's. And this is the same time I was going to the Niagara apartment. And I remember that when that thing in the Free Press was published, that was kind, you know, I was like big man on campus for a few days. I mean, you know, you understand
Oh,
that,
yeah.
you know, it was like, oh God, Bruce got this article. And I remember the people in the advertising department, the design department, took the article and they put it on a board, you know, Hudson's Own, or I forget what they put, you know, something Bruce, you know, and wrote things. And so that, and then they presented me with that. So that was kind of nice. But I was there. I was there. I was just there for 1 year.
Okay.
I stayed there 1 year, and I quit. And my dad was mad at me because I quit. I think it was another stupid thing I did. I think I was like due to have a vac get a vac paid vacation, and I quit right before I got my paid vacation. You know,
Why did you quit?
I just didn't want to do it anymore, and I don't remember exactly why. I had a best friend, another one of my best. There were a group of us at CCS who were not interested in commercial photography. One guy was Paul Runyon. His father was vice president at Ford Motor Company, big wig. Actually got me a job 1 year, one summer at the Wixom plant so I could earn money for school. So he was a very good friend. And then I had another guy, his name was Brian Weisberg. And he was a little guy, and he had a heart defect. He had a congenital heart defect, kind of a pointed chest, skinny little guy, but a real cut up, you know. And I mean, we had really good times. We'd laugh a lot and be bad, and but we were all interested in photographing, people, you know, art, sort of art photography. And I remember when I was at Hudson's, Brian died. I had a call from, he has a twin brother, Arlen Weisberg. And he called, I had a call somehow through, maybe he had my number in the photo lab, and he called me and he told me that I had visited Brian just a few days. Brian got, he had to go into the hospital. We had this thing where Brian initiated it. We'd shake hands, and then Brian would kind of, he'd sort of look at his hand, then he'd kind of,
wipe it out
his shirt, you know. And so I remember being at the, with Bonnie, my college girlfriend. We went to visit Brian in the hospital, and he walked us to the elevator, and we shook hands. And of course, we both looked at our hands and kind of, and then the elevator door closed, and a couple days later, he died. He had some sort of massive heart attack, and his brother called me and told me that. But Brian, it all ties in. After Brian died in 78, his parents gave me his press camera. So it was Brian's press camera that I used in Pole Town, and I was in touch with Brian's brother. I sometimes meet him at Machpelah Cemetery. Kaddish, do you know that? It's something that Jews say at a grave. So on his birthday, every year since Brian died, his twin brother is at his grave and says Kaddish. Mm-hmm. So I've been to that a few times. But he came to the opening of my Pole Town exhibit, mm-hmm. in Hamtramck, and I had to give a little talk, and I started off by talking about Brian and how his parents gave me the camera that I used on this pole, and his brother was, you know, moved by that.
Wow.
So that's what, you know, that's sort of what happened at Hudson's.
Yeah. What happened to Paul Runyon?
Paul Runyon went east. Mm-hmm. Well, he was in Albuquerque, New Mexico for a while at art school. Then he went to Philadelphia. He was in New York. He was sort of a privileged kid. And he was an intern at a gallery called Light Gallery, which was in the early 80s was a big photography gallery when people were actually starting to put money into art photographs. He was an intern there, and I bought a photograph there by a guy named Harry Callahan, he's sort of on the level of Ansel Adams, contemporary of Ansel Adams, who was actually a photographer at GM for a while. But he's very well known if you study history of photography. And I bought, and he has a kind of a famous picture he took of these trees in snow on the lake shore in Chicago, Lake Michigan in the background. It's very stark. And I paid like a couple hundred dollars for this print. And I had it all these years, and it's Callahan died. Has died, and it's worth varying amounts depending on the, what do they call it when they know the back, where a work of art has been. There's a
provenance.
There's a term for that, and I don't think, you know, all I can, I don't have a receipt. I would just say I bought it, but one sold at Sotheby's for $30,000 at auction. Bill Schwab, the photographer who I had the job at City Hall first, I saw him one day and he said, "You're Callahan. I was going through the Sotheby's website and the trees in snow sold for auction for $30,000. But I've seen it like 15, you know, so it's worth something.
Yeah.
I considered selling it. So what was the question?
What happened to Paul Runyon?
Yeah, he stayed in the East, mm-hmm. and he's at Drexel. He's in the photography department,
okay.
Sort of the head of the photography department. But I lost touch with him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then you went to the city of Dearborn as their part-time and then full-time photographer.
Yeah.
So what was, I don't know, I mean, I guess the big question is, what was that like? But that seems silly. So what?
Well, no. No more silly than all the stuff I've been talking about for the last hour and a half. You know, I was I'm not good at math, but I was not a young man anymore in 19. I was born in 53. This was 19, you know, in the late 80s. My mm-hmm. dad died in 89. Mm-hmm. And of course, my, you know, my dad was like, ah, Bruce, you know, he's worried about me a lot. Mm-hmm. And right after my dad died, I got this job opened up at the city of Dearborn. So I got this job in 1990, and it was wonderful because I had bought this building in Dearborn on Tireman and Chase Road. It didn't cost much. It was $34,000. My mother helped me, gave me some money. I lived up above, had sort of a studio on the ground floor, which was sort of a neat place, but, you know, I had plans on renting it, but, you know, things just don't work out sometimes, and I was getting sort of worried. And then Bill decided to go to Oakwood Hospital, and I got this full-time job, and it was just, and I'm on top of all this, I'm a type 1 diabetic. Oh. I've been diabetic since I was 10 years old, 1963. Bad year for Kennedy and John Kennedy and myself. And I had no health insurance at all. But when I got this job, that was back when, you know, what they say about government jobs, you know, the pay was okay, but you had wonderful benefits. Mm-hmm. So I got health insurance. And to this day, even though I've been retired for 6 years, I am very, very fortunate. I pay nothing. I have a small copay on prescriptions. Mm-hmm. So, blah, blah, blah.
So what was it like to go from sort of the free spirit photographer to working for the city?
Well, there's still a little bit of free spirit there because unlike other employees, you know, most of the employees at City Hall, they're in their department with their boss mm-hmm. and all their, you know, they have this thing that they have to do, and I have a lot of freedom. You know, the mayor would call me up to his office when he had guests, or, Bruce, go, we need pictures of tennis lessons. You know, or people at the pool. So I was able to go out, and I was kind of on. I could leave, and just, you know, go out and take pictures mm-hmm. during the day. And that, of course, that was a day back in the day when we had darkroom and developed the film and all that stuff. So it was really a wonderful. It was pretty nice. Yeah. You know, I actually remember that it's people don't understand it. Maybe some do, but I actually went to a store, and I bought, this was right after I got hired, and I bought an electric razor. And it's like, I just went in there, and I picked it up, and I paid for it. And I hadn't, you know, before that, I'm like, I can't, you know, always you're worried about spending money. You know, it's like, oh boy, I can't have this, I can't have that. And just that, being able to do that, I bought that thing, that little thing for 25 or 30 bucks, but I just gave her the money and walked out with a smile on my face. And I always remember that. So that's, it just sort of changed my life. You know, you could actually, you know, that's why work is so important for, you know, self-esteem and well-being and being able to pay your bills for so many people. People are devastated by not, you know, it ruins lives, you know, not being able to do what you want to do.
And yeah.
So it was good.
Do you remember your first assignment with the city?
No, but when I go back to the negatives,
yeah.
You know, that now it used to be at City Hall, but now they're at the Dearborn Historical Museum. When City Hall left, when city government left the old City Hall, I volunteered to move what was still left of the photo lab to the Dearborn Historical Museum. So I was in charge of moving all the neck. And there are like 5x7 manila envelopes, thousands and thousands of them, because the city always had full-time photographers back to the late 1940s. So, you know, everything. They would go out almost every day and photograph. You know, Hubbard, the other day I was scanning negatives when General Douglas MacArthur visited Dearborn. You know, so
You have all those, or they're...
I have access to them in the in the historical museum.
Yeah.
And I can go through those envelopes, and all of a sudden on an envelope in about 1987, there's my... on the envelope, you put the assignment and the date, you know, what the subject is and the date, and all of a sudden my handwriting appears. So I could actually tell you what the first assignment was.
Yeah.
But I was very busy. But then as the, you know, Guido died a young man. He was a year younger than I was at the time. He died 10 years ago in 2006. And then digital photography came in. So, like, the department started taking their own digital pictures. They didn't need me to take, to have the film and develop the film and make the prints. And then we had the new mayor, John O'Reilly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Guido was very picture-oriented, PR. You know, he was, I was always going with him, taking pictures. And, it, you know, I think it was a plan. You know, you give these pictures away, compliments of Mayor Guido, you know, I got to vote for this guy again because I got, he's got to stay mayor because I got to pit my, I got my picture with him, you know. But O'Reilly is, was very different. In the 4 years that O'Reilly was mayor, I was never, not once, I never went to the mayor's office again. A guy that used to have guests come in, and he'd call me up to take these pictures with these people. But Roddy's just a different animal, different guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, didn't need pictures. About 2 weeks after Guido died, I asked, I got permission to go in his office. And I said, I'd like to go in there, and because it was still the way he left it.
Mm-hmm.
So I went in there and I documented his office before they had to, clean it out. So yeah. I have those pictures.
Wow. What'd they do with those?
All that stuff.
All the pictures.
Well, they're digital by that time. I have them in digital form mm-hmm. At the museum.
Mm-hmm. How did digital change your work?
Oh, it was great. I still love. I thank God for digital. You know, I remember a guy coming down to the photo lab that worked at City Hall in the housing department. And he. Sharp guy, he sort of knew what you could do with digital photography, and he started telling me, and I'm just like, you're kidding, you know, it's like you'll be able to, there's no dark room, you don't have to be, you know, I spent a lot of time in the dark room
mm-hmm.
printing all these pictures
mm-hmm.
He said you'll be able to sit out here in the light. And you just put a card. You take there's a card in the camera, and they just come up on the and you can you don't have to make prints and drive them to the newspaper. You'll be able to just and I'm like, what? But it all came true.
Yeah.
You know, and I liked it. It really there's so much more that you can do with digital.
Did it change how you shoot?
Not really. No, I still shoot pretty much the same.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, I'm digitizing my old negatives, so they're becoming digital. And then I make these prints are all inkjet.
Yeah.
There's nothing in the darkroom anymore.
Yeah.
So I've always liked digital.
Yeah.
The good old days in the darkroom were fun, but I was happy to see them go.
How much do you shoot now? It sounds like a lot of your projects are the digitization now.
Yeah, I don't shoot a lot. I go down to these old neighborhoods sometimes, mm-hmm. like the Shane, and I photographed some of the old buildings that I went into and photographed.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not really involved in that anymore. I do freelance for the city. But it's mostly going over my old stuff and sort of digitizing it and repairing it and having a few exhibits where I can.
And then your main thing right now is the getting your work ready for archiving at the Wright Museum, or is that fair to say?
Well, that's sort of my project right now mm-hmm. is working with a woman I met at the, that's in the where they keep all the archives at the museum. So I'm working with her, and I go down there every once in a while, and we look through pictures, and she said, oh, I'd like this, I don't want that. And so she made a selection of my Pole Town pictures, and that's them. I'm currently finishing up those, and then we'll move on to something else.
With them.
With them.
With the right, yeah.
But I don't, you know, I don't really have, I mean, I'd like to do something with these Coleman Young pictures, as I told you. I'd like to have a little exhibit of those. I think they're kind of interesting.
The Dearborn Day.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Mayor Exchange Day.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I, you know, I photographed in. I wandered around in Brush Park. In the same time I was in the corridor, and I photographed a lot of the old mansions there. And I, you know, people find me every once in a while. I was contacted by. Remember last year the. The Ransom Gillis house was rent. It's a house. It's a well-known house on the corner of Alfred and John R. It had the turret on it, and I photographed it in '76. And what's the rehab addict? What's the TV her. Program?
That's
yeah,
rehab
her.
Addict. I know yeah. What you mean.
Well, yeah. They got the. They decided to do the Ransom Gillis house. And they found me somehow and contacted me, and I sold them pictures that I took, and they appeared on that. If you watch the first episode, in the first 5 minutes of the first episode of the renovation of the Ransom Gillis house, these black and white pictures will come up, and those are mine. So every once in a while, sort of neat little things happen.
What else? Is there anything else like that you can think of? I mean, you when we went through the pictures, you mentioned some of the people that had found you, but
quite a few of the people, and that's sort of thrilling. I guess there was some the Ford Foundation. They were looking for something to do with I don't know if it was African American, but business, small business. They were running something that for a couple months or so, probably some sort of an online promotion. And they bought one of my photographs. Yeah, I'm actually, you know, there was a guy, the only other interview I've ever done, a guy from, I think he's in Scotland, but he's like a piece doing a PhD thesis on photography in Detroit and Chicago. And he was here a few years ago, and he interviewed me at Wayne State. So I've, you know, so that's happened. And, I mean, every once in a while, little things, you know, people that somehow find me who have a need for the kind of places I photographed in that era, and they use the pictures. So.
All right. Well, I do want to see some of the other photos you brought. Is there anything else you want to talk about or we haven't covered that you thought I'd ask you? I'm sure we'll both think of other things so we can.
Well, that's how it always is. No, yeah. I don't know. It's just. You know, I've thought, you know, you just hear. I've heard a lot of comments through the years about Detroit. I wouldn't go. You go down there, and people don't. A lot of people are afraid, I guess, of the unknown. And they don't go downtown. They won't go, you know, I remember, it's vulgar, but I going out to my dad's house, my parents' house in Brighton, and my dad had a friend, and, you know, he knew, and he said, so how's everything in Niggertown? You know, and I'm just like, you know, but it's just kind of, that's how some people think. But not wanting to go into the city, and, you know, I did. And I met a lot of wonderful people, you know, ordinary people like me, you know. But I got to know them, and their lives are fascinating. Just the things that have happened to them in their lives, and the things, their homes, are interesting, mm-hmm. valuable, and you know, those people all sort of, they're still with me. You know, I mean, that is sort of, they sort of make you the person that you are. You know, if you're afraid of everything and you won't take a chance, then there's something you're missing. But if you, you know, and this, you can apply this to a lot of different things. You know, skydiving, I don't know. But, you know, I was willing to take a little bit of a chance, and it turned out well for me. Through the years, I saw a lot of interesting places, and I met a lot of wonderful people that I never would have met without a camera. You know, the camera is like the—I always believe it's like a magic wand. It's like a magic tool. I mean, just walking around. I mean, other than money, maybe. You know, just walking around. You can talk to people, but when you have a camera, that somehow unlocks doors if used with sensitivity, you know, and it's like not pushing a camera in somebody's face, and it's like photographing them with respect and giving them pictures, and it's a good tool.
What do you think when you see all of us with our smartphones and selfies and people taking pictures all the time, but not necessarily the same
art
or meaning?
It's just the way it is nowadays. You know, it's just such a common. It's such a common thing. It's the digital age. It's like, you know, it's okay. You know, it's. I guess I don't do it. I don't. I've never had a good cell phone. I still don't. I mean, there's a lot of good. You know, it's like I said. It's a democratic art form. You know, everybody can do it, and they do it with their cell phones now, and they're just preserving these memories. You know, so that's a good thing.
It doesn't minimize your profession.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe it does, because it's just such a proliferation of it. I guess it used to be a certain group that sort of did this, and it was a skill. And now it doesn't require as much skill, I guess, to take these pictures. So it's the nature of photography's changed. But, I mean, there's still serious photographers. Mm-hmm. Art, you know, art photographers who I don't really relate to, I don't think.
Why did you never?
Sometimes.
Did you ever try to become a newspaper photographer?
No, that's another thing. My dad was mad at me about. I had that. Maybe there's some psychological thing here, but you know, I had that article in the Free Press, mm-hmm. and my dad was rather upset with me that I sort of had a. He perceived it as having a foot in the door, uh-huh. you know. And I didn't have a job. Why didn't you try to, you know, go down there, and you could have gotten a job as a newspaper photographer? But I was lackadaisical. I don't know what the word is. Not really ambitious, yeah. You know. Even the Pole Town project, I wasn't really aware. I think I had heard something about that. But it didn't. I should admit to these things, but I mean, this is the truth. I had heard about it, but it didn't really kick in. And I had a friend at Wayne, who now is sort of the head of the photography department at OCC, Oakland Community College, and Nick Valente. And he said, Bruce, he was at Wayne the same time I was. And he said, Bruce, let's go over to. They're gonna demolish this whole neighborhood. Let's go over there, and let's do a book. Let's photograph over there. And I'm like, well, okay. So the first couple times I went with Nick. But Nick didn't continue it. You know, Nick, maybe he had to drive to the suburbs. I don't know. But had it not been for Nick getting me over there, I may never have gone. So Cass Corridor, I did that on my own. But often I've needed to be directed. I've needed somebody to push me, show me something.
When your pictures of the corridor are, and I don't mean this in a negative way, but they're limited. They're very specialized to a few places. What else is out there, you know, whether they're photos or writings or whatever it is, that tells more stories, like different stories about the Cass Corridor at the time?
Well, I don't know if there are. There are other photographers, if that's what you're referring to. Okay. That photo. I mean, there's some guy. And I don't know these people, but there's somebody that lived down here at that time. Maybe preceded me somewhat. Maybe in the '60s, and he photographed, you know, some of the artists in the corridor and things in the corridor. But I've never really seen like a body of work that's kind of like mine. Of anything, there's a, like, if you Google Cass Corridor images, a lot of pictures come up, but it's kind of this and that,
right?
You know, just a you know, I think there's writings there. I mean, there are a lot of artists involved in the corridor, so I don't really know what else there is. I would guess that. I mean, maybe your class is finding, there are certainly other people to interview. You know, at Affirmations, I'm not good at, Charles, an older man who I used to see when I lived down here. I used to see this guy walking around on his own. I've gone to the Detroit Film Theater for years. I started going to Detroit Film Theater right when it started in the mid-70s. And I used to see this guy. And he has an affiliation with Affirmations, and he told me, I showed him my pictures when I was trying to get this exhibit there, and he said, you know, I used to live on Peterborough. He said, I was a little boy. I grew up right there by the Burton School, which is Cass and Peterborough. He said, I lived right around the corner from there. So he remembers the corridor through all those decades. Yeah. when he lived there.
There, one of my friends who also lived down here at the time said there were not a lot of children that grew up in the area. So that's kind of unique, I think.
Well, maybe before it started to get kind of go downhill, maybe there were more then. Because I think at one time it was a normal neighborhood. Mm-hmm. You know, like Brush Park was a sort of for the gentry, wealthy businessmen. And then it broke up into rooming houses and got sort of bad. But, yeah, then.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, that was my pleasure.
Yeah.
That was fun.